Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. This is Access Astrology. Three astrologers who get together on Monday evening and talk about what's going on in the sky and how that's reflected on the earth. And we take calls from listeners and do other entertaining things. And my name is Mark Waltz. I'm speaking from New York City, and I'm joined by...
Ann Ortley, and I'm also in New York City on the Upper West, Upper East Side, at my bright red desk. And
yeah,
soon, Heather. Huh?
And I'm over on the west side.
You're over on the west side, by the river.
Yeah, the island is covered.
The island is covered.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Heather should be calling in from, actually, probably New Mexico.
Oh, that's right. She was going down to speak down there. Yeah, I forgot about that.
I believe she was there for the eclipse, and she probably would have seen it in the very early morning.
Mm-hmm. She gets up.
Yeah.
I'm always very impressed by people that gets up and listen to it. Like, really? You're going to get up and watch it? Wow.
My aunt lives in Las Vegas, New Mexico. It's near Santa Fe. And she thought she was up for her walk in the morning.
Wow.
She said it started as a sliver.
Mm-hmm.
At about 5:45 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was pretty well eclipsed at the point that it was setting in where she was in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Further west, it would still be visible.
Right.
But
it
set before it finished, you know, before it came back from the eclipse in New Mexico. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. It's always,
I saw a beautiful photo of it over the San Francisco Bridge, a really gorgeous photo that somebody had taken, kind of time-lapse photography of it as it moved and as the face changed. It was really stunning. I'm going to post it on my Facebook page.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really gorgeous. Oh.
Wow.
But it was very beautiful.
Wow.
So.
And a nice setup for the solstice coming up.
Yes, we have a lovely solstice. That's next week on the 22nd.
Oh, no, it is a week away.
Yeah, it's a week away. We're getting ready. This week we have Mercury retrograde. Stationing
right.
to go direct. Yay!
Right.
And we also have Venus squaring Saturn on Sunday, which is all about, you know, what's the value, what's your value, and how are we doing. And we're still processing the eclipse stories, too. I know the eclipse for me was really pretty big. I had, I realized a situation in my life that was running very parallel to what went on in 1973 when I was in college, and I went, oh my God, it's the same story. And so I kind of had this breakthrough in figuring something out, and I, you know, I'm kind of looking to see if there was something in 92, which I haven't figured out yet, but the one for 72 I got. And I went, oh my God, that's the story. So the eclipses run across time and space. So if we go back to 73 and back to 92 and back to 73, fall, winter time frame, the story's back up again. And it's interesting, you know, like in the case of Nixon, he's back in the news, and his nodes were on that point because he's in the movie Hoover, you know, the J. Edgar Hoover movie that's out. So we find he's got actually a really
he should be in it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a good part in it, or you know, the actor playing him has a good part in it. And so it was really interesting. It was a good movie. I have to say I went to see it this weekend with my friend Madeline. We had a lot of fun. So my only complaint is Clint Eastwood did it, and he has to help us old people, cuz Hoover would walk out one door as an old guy and then he'd walk through the doorway and he'd come in as a new guy, young guy. So he kept time switching us. And you had to go, okay, wait, what year? What president? What's he wearing? You know, it would have been nice if he just had underneath 1941 or whatever to help those of us who are a little aged shift.
Right, right.
Because it was constantly shifting. And I'm like, okay, well, that's modern. Those are old cars. Those are, you know. But Leo got really old and looked very much like Mr. Hoover, you know, with his aging makeup. Yeah. And then the Winklevoss twins from the Winklevi from Facebook they played the Clive Tolson role. Or he played the Clive Tolson role. So it was good. Arnon Hammer, I think, was his name. Arnold Hammer, Arnie Hammer. And Judith Dench was great as the as Hoover's mom. So, and Naomi Watts, a brown-haired Naomi Watts playing his secretary. She didn't look gorgeous at all. You know, and I think of her as being really rather, she's very much a shapeshifter. You know, she changes her looks quite a bit. So, but anyway, it was good. So, I had a good time. So, and what did you think about the week?
It sounds like a lot of eclipse theme in that movie.
Well, it was, because they kept swifting around, and, you know, Hoover was writing his biography. And he died in office, I guess, with under Nixon. And Nixon said, wait, don't announce that he's dead. Let's get over there and get his secret files first. And then they had this whole thing that no one found his files except for a few misfiled items. And then, of course, they show the group running in and sealing his office off, and all the files are gone already. And his secretary is shredding them in the background. So it was very impressive.
Wow.
It was really well done. Clint did a good job.
You think we might have been in those files.
I know. You know. I was a little kid, though. I was 74. I was like in college.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
They still might have been looking.
Well, I know my sister. I know I'm in some, because my sister applied to be an FBI agent. So they check out the whole family, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah
so I have an FBI file, but I don't know. I've never written to say what's in it, you know.
Right.
Although my friend Ann Dunford was doing genealogy, and she had her uncle was in, he was an FBI agent, so she got his whole file, and it was like 500, 600 pages, all the different cases he'd worked on and stuff.
Yeah.
And I probably should write and say, what do you have on me? You know, what's in there?
Well, this would be the day to do it, because you've got a Mercury station. So it's been retrograde, now it's stations to go direct. And it's the kind of thing, you know, to do with that.
Right.
The retrograde part is looking back, bringing up history, being interested in the past.
Right.
And then when it stations, there's a lot of energy to just, you know, get anything done to do with Mercury.
Right, to want to move forward and conquer the world. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you request the files on the station, you'll probably get them quickly.
Yeah. That could be interesting.
Yeah.
I may have to write. I've been having my government action program lately. I've been, you know, calling the city and, you know, with my roof that leaks, my apartment that leaks, you know. So I had the building inspector here the other day. I'm like, okay. He's like, well, fine them. I'm like, good, fine them. I'm fix my leak. I don't really care about the fines. I just want the leak fixed. But perhaps part of getting the leak fixed is getting the fines paid. Or the fines administered. So, yeah. So it's cool. And then,
so we have Mercury going direct.
We have Mercury going direct, yep. That
and
happens tomorrow.
It's shadow until about the 20th of December or something?
Till the 1st of January.
Oh, 1st of January.
Yeah, he's in his shadow.
Right.
And interestingly, he's...
Lingering effect.
Lingering effect. He's stationing at 3, which is the degree that Mars is going to station at in April.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this kind of 3 degree of the mutables, and then the eclipse was at 2 degrees.
Yeah.
So they're all 3 kind of stimulating that 2-3 degrees of the mutable signs, waking them up and saying, oh, okay, let's have this really be activated. So one of the things that we find with it, you know, with Mercury stationing and Mars stationing, that degree becomes a hot degree. So if you think about the first week of November and then the eclipse around Thanksgiving and then the station tomorrow when Mercury stations at 3, and then in April, the station that takes place mid-April when Mars stops there.
Mars.
Plus, we have a number of lunations at 2. The Capricorn new moon is at 2, and then the January new moon is at 2, Aquarius. The February new moon is at 2, Pisces. It's like the theme of twos. And then the March new moon is at 2, Aries. And then the The April new moon is at 1 Taurus, and the May new moon is at 0 Gemini. So they kind of are pulsing across that 2, 2, 2, you know, kind of waking up that degree point. So for all of us, whatever, you know, especially if we have planets at those early degrees, we're having a lot of stimulation. But just in general, the heavens keep kind of driving back that story about the Mercury retrograde and the Mars retrograde, whatever that story is. And then, of course, right after Mars goes retrograde for a little chunk of time in there, you know, I've been really focused about the Mars retrograde, but Venus is retrograde too, from May 15th to June 27th in Gemini. So she's a retrograde girl also. So it's an interesting kind of time, because retrograde planets really make us review and redo the energy. So this is Mercury communications. I know I had a keyboard that died, and a lot of people I know have been having a hard time with this one, because it's Mercury's in Sag, and it's very not behaving well, you know. So, what have you found on the Mercury retrograde?
Well, actually, it was funny. On Saturday, I noticed that I kept backing up in the car. I had very important backing up things.
Huh.
Like, for example, we were looking for a sanctuary to take a hike.
Uh-huh.
We saw the sign, uh-huh. And there was this little road. And so I started driving up, and it wound its way up a ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And it very rapidly became less of a small road and more of a trail.
Mm-hmm.
And it really wasn't a road at all, you know, and after a while I said, you know, we're not really meant to be driving on this, but I kept going anyway. And then once we got up to where it ended, there was really no place to turn around. So I had to back up all the way out, down the hill, around the curves.
Wow.
I'm very good at backing up. I can drive backward very quickly.
Huh.
But it was just one of those things. And that's what got me to first notice it. And then later on in the day, I had several just important backing up things I had to do.
Wow.
So I said, well, okay, it's all about backing up.
Hmm.
There's things that happen in traffic, and I had to back up to go mm-hmm. around, and back up this, back up that.
So it was very literal.
Yeah, it was truly, you know, going backwards.
Wow. Wow. Huh. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So what was the, so you got out of the, obviously you got out of the ridge, because you're back home in New York, not on the ridge, trapped in a car.
Right, yeah, we were up at Mount Kisco in that
wow.
area. There's a sanctuary
mm-hmm.
a little ways out of town that has little hiking trails.
Wow.
And we hadn't been there before, we knew about it. So
mm-hmm.
that's why we made a slight wrong turn onto this thing. And I thought, well, maybe it's going to take us to it. But it didn't, it just was a little,
wow.
sort of a wood road on it. Just a chunk of property.
You guys really have good adventures.
Yeah.
No, you really do. You're always like doing stuff. It's very cool. It's like, what'd you do this weekend, Mark? And it's always like you're having an adventure.
Yeah. Got lost here.
Yeah, no, it's
yeah.
good. It's like a good,
well,
it's a good relationship.
Put me in mind of the,
huh?
the old days, growing up in Michigan. We learned to back up because we used to, when we were teenagers, we used to have races in reverse.
Oh, races in reverse?
Yeah, we race around suburban tracks.
Uh-huh.
You know? And, you know, after 11 at night, there wasn't really much going on. So
right.
We would just take over the street and, you know, have races going backwards. It's more of a challenge than going forward.
And going forwards, right, yeah.
yeah.
So that's how you developed your backing up skills.
Exactly.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I know my sister has her kids back up on the basketball. They run backwards, you know, because they have to run backwards during basketball games. And it's
right.
very disconcerting to run backwards, you know, when you're trying to mm-hmm. do it. It's like you want to look, and, you know, in that case, you have to run backwards without looking and just kind of orient, you know, orient yourself. You're watching the basketball. You're not watching the – you can't run sideways. You have to run backwards to get the, you know,
yeah.
to kind of keep the guarding thing going.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember – trying it once and thinking, this is really hard, you know, because running backwards is not an intuitive, you don't feel right. So I would imagine backing up, same thing. But if you, did you used
yes.
to win the drag races?
Oh, sometimes, and sometimes not, you know.
Oh. Wow, but that's pretty
the main
cool.
The aim was not to crash. You know?
The aim was not to crash, right, yeah.
Right. No, because sometimes you go whipping around the corner and then somebody would have parked their car on the street. And
oh, wow.
You
yeah.
expect it. You have to avoid it.
I have to avoid it.
Anyway.
All right, cool. Well, I'll put out our number
but
for
that
college.
Is the kind of thing that's what Mercury retrograde feels like for us
mm-hmm.
Mentally, the kind of mental tasks we have
it's
to do.
It's a mental backup,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it feels like, oh, I'm having to do this a different way than I'm used to.
Right, right.
So it feels awkward, but you get used to it. And in the process, you learn something about thinking.
Yes.
Thinking backward teaches you something about thinking forward. And if we only thought forward all the time, then we would just take it for granted and, you know, never notice anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. But there are things that you notice during a Mercury retrograde that, you know, like logic works a little differently.
Yeah. It really does. It doesn't hold the same energy.
Yeah, things don't proceed from A to B to C to D. Instead, mm-hmm. they're actually going from D to C to B to A.
Right.
Like, how good are you at doing the alphabet backward?
Right? Crappy. I freely admit I'm crappy at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but actually during a Mercury retrograde, it seems like a sensible thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's doing the alphabet backwards, so you should join them and have a good time doing
good
backwards
exercise.
Alphabet. Yeah.
It's a good exercise when you're learning a language to learn to count down. You know, we get real happy when it can count up
right.
in another language. And it never occurs to us to count down.
But right, like 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We can do it in English, but it wasn't easy when you first learned it.
No, because you have to think of the number and kind of reverse your
exactly.
order of it.
So you
yeah.
keep going, let's see, 9, 10, okay, 10, 9, oh, 8, 9, 9, 8.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Right. No, it's totally true. It's backwards. It's hard to think backwards. It's hard to count backwards.
Right.
Well, and that's why they have you, when they're putting you to sleep when you're getting drugged, when you're having surgery, they have you go 199. You know, you have to concentrate, and then you're gone. You're
right.
asleep. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So all this Mercury retrograde, that's what happens.
Backwards.
It starts
right.
to work like that.
Making the world go backwards. I like that. Yeah. Well, it definitely has been an interesting retrograde, I have to say. I've learned a lot, and I've actually solved a lot, you know. And I'm a, you know, for me, it's been the retrograde's been up high in the chart in my Sagittarius house, so it's been a lot of thinking things. And directional stuff, like what direction do I want to head in and what kind of stuff do I want to do. It's an interesting process.
And you got new insights?
I did. I had a lot of insights in terms of what, and then also on the fourth house, it's like, I don't really need to do that anymore. Let me release that. I don't really need to do that anymore. Let me release that. I've been doing a lot of releasing on the, I want to say obligations, you know, like where you get told, well, you know, you really should do this. And you're like, oh, okay. And you don't necessarily think about, do I want to do it? You're just kind of doing it because someone told you you should.
Should, yeah.
I know. It's a should word, you know. And of course, should is shoulders, you know. It's shouldering more than you're supposed to, as opposed to,
right.
like, you know, do I actually want to do this? So, and we have loud music outside in my, it's like it's springtime here on the east side. So, yeah, and I do think the Venus-Saturn aspect coming up on Sunday is interesting, too, because Venus squares Saturn, and they're in mutual reception, so they're going to really be able to swap places, which gives them a little bit of an extra power, because they're going to be, they're not just plain old Venus-Saturn. And normally, you know, Venus, when she runs into Saturn, she gets much more serious about love matters and about finances and money, and she's really much more focused. So we do have a lot of, you know, serious conversations going on around money and financing in our culture and our world, you know, not only the budget, you know, the budget thing that they're supposed to have hammered out, but a lot of the, you know, the assumptions about, well, what should we pay for as a culture, what's our process? And, you know, what do we believe to be true? And then, of course, you know, in terms of the debates, Newt Gingrich was getting kind of hammered for his large, you know, fundraising efforts with Fannie Mae. You know, I'm not part of the problem. I just took millions of dollars from these people. And so I think, you know, as a culture, we're all kind of looking. And, you know, it is Christmas time, you know, which makes us really go, well, what actually do I want? And I know with me, I've been trying to do more. Let's do presents that I can use up, you know. I don't really need stuff that I don't really need anything. You know, I've got enough of everything, you know, and I can go to the grocery store and buy food, and I have a good job, and, you know, and like, okay, what do I actually need? You know, I don't need much. And so what does that look like if I'm, you know, living in harmony with the world, you know, maybe donate something in my name or do something like that. So it's an interesting, which, of course, my family doesn't really do, you know.
And Saturn square Venus will bring up that kind of thinking. So
yes.
We move into this actual square. It's been building. And now as it comes to perfection on Sunday, we'll feel that very strongly. And in kind of the worst case scenario, there's a feeling of deprivation, not voluntary deprivation, but, you know, a feeling of a lack when Venus and Saturn are squared. But it can be a voluntary one of saying, you know, let me focus on just what I need and not have more than I need. And that's actually, you know, that's something that Venus square Saturn can really help us see and show us and show a value to that. So it's kind of that, you know, glass half empty, glass half full sort of proposition.
Right.
And Venus square Saturn shows that very clearly. It's all in how you look at it. Do you feel deprived or do you feel you have no waste?
Mm-hmm. What are you really trying to accomplish? Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I know I have that aspect natally. So whenever it's doing something in the sky, I always have kind of a rocking couple of days or so. So because for me...
I have it too, you know.
Oh, do you? I didn't know you had it. Yeah.
I do, yeah.
Cool. Which one do you have?
Yeah, I have closing square on Venus to Saturn.
Oh, yeah, I have the conjunction. Yeah. So closing square, what happens to you when that hits? I always love collecting... For those of you in the audience who are going, what are they talking about? I love Venus-Saturn square stories because they have... There's a real... you know, there's a real theme in the person's life that repeats over and over again, you know, when it happens. So I'm always like, what happens to you, Mark?
Yeah.
Besides
really,
driving backwards
on
roads, huh?
The worst expression of it is a fear. Fear of deprivation. Fear of loss of things.
Right.
Or fear of things being withheld.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the worst expression of it.
Okay.
You know, that's actually worse than being truly deprived.
Right, because the fear kind of comes up from a place of
that
deep
something
down.
Will happen, so I become deprived. In a way, you're better off just being deprived, because then you get to work fixing it.
Right.
Whereas otherwise, you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. No, that's a good way of explaining it. Because there is that sense of, really? You know, that's what's going to happen? You know, I find with me at least that, you know, it's like, really? That's what you're going to do? Okay. Well, now that I know, I'm all right. I can handle it. But it's the not... I find I have an incipient anxiety with Venus-Saturn. Meaning I get, like, very anxious. Uh-oh, you know, something dumb big's going to happen. And I, you know, even before I knew I had the aspect, you know, I would have this... almost an unnamed anxiety, but I have it in a conjunction in the eighth house. So for me, it comes in more of an anxious form. But what it really is the principle of desire, love, and what we really deeply want is having a conversation with Saturn who says, well, you know, what would happen if you didn't get it? You know, and you're like, what?
Right.
Really? I want it. I know, but what would happen? You know, you'd be okay if you didn't get it, right? And the part of you that goes, well, yeah. Does it have to be one of the choices? You know, can I pick from behind the door number two now that I know door number one and door number three are crappy? And so there's a whole energy with Venus Saturn around wanting to see what the other choices are before you choose. So there's also a cautiousness I find with it too. People get very cautious with it because they're like, well, I'm going to get stuck with it if I pick bad. So I'm going to wait and see what I get, you know.
I think with the conjunction of Venus-Saturn, there is more of a sense that you can negotiate with it.
Yeah.
Where there's a square, there's a feeling of there's no negotiating.
You're just stuck with it.
This is going to happen in spite of me.
In spite of your best efforts.
Yeah, there's nothing I can do about it. I just have to wait till it hits and then make the best decision.
Make the best choice from
time.
There.
Whereas when you have a conjunct, I think you feel like you have a little more choice going into it.
You can
and,
at least say to Saturn, hey,
you
know, can we talk about this? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what happens when you negotiate with Saturn? Does he laugh at you or does he listen to you?
No, that's when Saturn will ridicule you for trying to negotiate. You think you can negotiate with me?
Right.
I'm Saturn, you're Venus.
Oh, chicken pox. No, I don't think so. You know, what are you thinking? You think you can talk to me about this? I'm not letting you talk to me.
Exactly. You know, right. Saturn just says, I can trump anything you put on the table, I can trump it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's true.
And he can. It's Saturn, you know.
Make an end run, you know.
Make it around the corner, yeah.
Right. If you can outrun Saturn.
Right.
You know,
Well, then he laughs at you because you think you can outrun him. He's like, he's just he wins. He wins it. He's the big guy, the Zodiac. He wins. So,
right.
Yeah, we also have the moon in Cancer on Monday and tomorrow till noon, 11 o'clock. And then it's void tomorrow afternoon with a closing aspect of a square to Saturn. So kind of stuff, Monday, Tuesday is a little blocked. Then Tuesday afternoon is Leo, all day Wednesday Leo, all day Thursday Leo, closing aspect, the opposition to Neptune. The dream is there, but it might not come true, but at least you know you've got the dream, you know, it's in place. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but don't give up. And then the end of the week, we have nice aspect, we have the lovely little Virgo moon with a void of a trine to Venus. Moon trines Venus saying, okay, you can have that. So there's kind of relief at the end of the week. But the beginning part of the week is a little hard. You know, it's kind of more of a, no, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. And, you know, part of it is, really? You're going to say no to me? Yep, I'm going to say no. Oh. And then you go, okay, you said no. Now what do I do next? And then, you know, it's not to say you can't have it. You know, I often find with Venus-Saturn is that you get the no from whatever, and then you just go, okay, well, not from you, but maybe from somebody else. You know, you may not be showing up for me, but I'll see if I can find it somewhere else. Because that's the other part we forget with Venus-Saturn, is that it wants us to work a little for what we want. It doesn't just give it to us. It's not like, you know, Santa Claus. It's like, it's not Jupiter. It's, you know, it's... You got to work. You got to show up and do your duty. And you go.
You know, when you especially feel that is when you have the Saturn opposite Venus.
Yes.
Sense that I must work for it.
I must work for it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if I do.
Saturn seems, you know, in that opposition point, it seems to be blaring at you and just laying the rules on you.
Much more directly or much more like this is the plan.
Right.
Yeah.
But even there, because you have that clear view across the opposition, there's the feeling in terms of your Venus stuff that not that you can negotiate with Saturn, but at least that you can understand the rules and get it right.
Right, right.
And so you say, well, if I just get it right, then I'll get everything I want.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to do it right.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. And right is relative. That's the other part. Your definition of right and Saturn's can be very different. So on that, the British lady, the British lady is whispering in my ear that the time has come to say goodbye.
I'm running out. Yeah, we didn't get to take a call.
We're very fast, and we did go. Did go fast, and we got. I don't think we got horribly off track. I mean, if the listeners think we did, let us know. We were. Heather wasn't here, so we didn't take callers because she's always one that says go to the videotape. So we'll have to make sure Heather's back next week. Well, she will because she's doing a thing in Albuquerque, Santa Fe. So if you're a Santa Fe person, you should be able to find her somewhere in your town because she's somewhere out there in Santa Fe.
We are signing off.
Yeah,
this is Access Astrology.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Waltz and Ann Ortley.
Yep, Ann Ortley. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Signing off for this week, And
wishing you all a great week.
Mercury Direct.
Yes.
And you can always look us up at astronyc.com. Astronyc.com.
Mm-hmm. And we all do readings, so if you want a nice Christmas present, it's a great present to give. Mark's running a special now, too, right? Aren't you, Mark?
Yeah, special. 1 hour reading, $79.
Yeah. Which is a great gift to give someone, and it is, of course, an ecologically sound gift, too.
That's right.
Which is very cool. So, very cool. So we'll see you all next week, and hopefully you all have a great Mercury Direct and a lovely Venus Saturn. And remember, Mark says, no, be careful when you negotiate. I say, talk to the big guy. And then he won't do it anyway, but at least you feel like you expressed yourself. So, all right. So we'll take care, folks. Have a good week.
Good night.
Bye.